Penguin Random House Audio presents Bound Feet and Western Dress, a memoir by Bong Mei Natasha Chang. Read for you by Nancy Wu. For my parents, and of course, Yoyi. Prologue. The carved mahogany trunk from China still stands in the living room of my parents' home in Connecticut, the house where I grew up. Dark and gleaming, its carved tiger claw feet grip the ground tenaciously, holding court in a corner of the room shared by Eames and Le Corbusier. I go to the trunk, fiddling with its complicated brass fixtures, and throw back the heavy lid. There is everything in this trunk. The secrets of China, the smell of camphor and clothing, dresses of another time and place. My grandmother's embroidered silk lounging robe, my grandfather's tuxedo, white dinner jackets and jodhpurs. The aprons of my ama, Shuma, lovingly stitched. The cheongsams from my mother's summers in Hong Kong, slim, high-collared dresses with slits on the side. Riffling through the clothes, I know them all. Automatically, I fold and refold them, a ritual I have performed since childhood. It was my father who taught me how to fold a cheongsam, respecting the collar, the most important part of the garment. I remember feeling embarrassed that he knew so much about women's clothing, but he told me that he had learned it from his own mother as a child. Now I find the item I am looking for, a black cheongsam like the one sold at Yuncheng, the shop of my great aunt, Zhang Youyi, who served as my mirror and mentor during the last years of her life. I have had this garment since I was a little child. It appeared one day amid my grandparents' things from Shanghai. The dress has no label, but Youyi recognized it immediately as we were rummaging through the family trunk one afternoon. "This is from my store," she said, as delighted as if she had come across an old friend. From then on, I considered this dress Youyi's and accepted its presence as unquestioningly as I did Youyi's gift to me during the last years of her life. It is this dress that holds us together, binds us together, transports us across the years and centuries. Unlike most of my relatives, whom I seem to have been born knowing, I remember distinctly the first time I met Zhang Youyi. The year was 1974. I was 9. As usual, we Changs were gathered at the Central Park West apartment of Fourth Sister. A successful clothing designer since her emigration to New York City in 1954, Fourth Sister dressed in exquisitely cut cheongsams, wore her hair up in a severe chignon, powdered her skin pale white, and sported bright red lipstick. I dreaded gatherings at her home. She would always call us, my brother, sister, and me, into the room, and inquire why we were not fatter, slimmer, smarter, faster, or sweeter, then laugh about us in Shanghainese as we stammered a reply. In her presence, none of us, including my mother, was allowed to wear glasses. Fourth Sister could not bear to look upon such ugliness. The evening that I first met Youyi, my family and I were ushered into Fourth Sister's living room. Immediately, I noticed a stranger in big bifocals sitting on the other side of the love seat from Fourth Sister. Elegant but unassuming, she seemed a complete contrast to glamorous Fourth Sister. I marveled that this stranger had been allowed to keep her glasses on. My father announced to us children, "This is your great auntie, Second Sister, who has just arrived from Hong Kong." I approached Youyi shyly, shaking her hand solemnly. I looked past the bifocals into her eyes. There was a flicker of recognition in them, as if she registered me from a place far away. I remembered feeling immediately that I could trust this woman. She lived in an apartment on Manhattan's Upper East Side, having moved from Hong Kong only after the death of her second husband. The family referred to her as Ching Bobo, a nickname meaning dearest uncle, apparently because of a family joke that she was part man. I looked at her short hair and dark pantsuit and liked what I saw. I hated dresses and had always been called a tomboy. Though my parents never spoke of it, I had heard vague rumors from my cousins and aunts that she had been divorced. They spoke about her divorce in a way that implied scandal, sorrow. I looked into her face for signs of either, and saw only calm and intelligence. But that first night I did not utter more than a few words to her, and although I saw her regularly at subsequent family gatherings, it was only about 5 years later that I began to speak with her. One summer, either 1979 or 1980, my father called Yoyi and invited her to visit us for several days in Connecticut. Apparently, he and Yoyi had discussed the possibility of such an outing at one of the previous family gatherings. Born in 1940, my father had known Yoyi during his childhood. He and his family had lived around the corner from her in Shanghai. When the communists came in 1949, my father and his family moved to Hong Kong, then Tokyo, then Sao Paulo, Brazil, before coming to America. Yoyi left China the same year for Hong Kong, where she met her second husband and lived there until his death in 1974. On her first visit to Connecticut, Yoyi brought with her the recipe and ingredients for zongzi, glutinous rice wrapped in a bamboo leaf. Under Yoyi's watchful eye, my mother and I prepared the meat and rice filling, then soaked the big bamboo leaves to soften them for wrapping. When we had produced our first finished zongzi, Yoyi declared our efforts a success. Each summer thereafter, Yoyi brought us a new recipe. 1 year for jiaozi, meat dumplings. Another year it was shrimp sauce. She carefully oversaw our preparations, then graded us on our achievements. I liked my great aunt's deliberate, careful approach. As we cooked, she talked to me, half in English, half in Chinese, about the differences between China and America and the old days versus today. I had grown up speaking English at home, but began to study Chinese in high school. When Yoyi spoke to me, there was never any recrimination in her voice that I was too American or could not possibly understand the China about which she spoke. No relative from the Zhang side, even my own father or grandparents, talked to me in such an easy manner. A teenager at the time, I felt caught in the middle of an acute identity crisis. As the first generation of my family born in the States, I was torn between two cultures. Chinese-American, I longed for a country I could call my own. I wanted a future, but could relate to nothing of my past. I yearned to understand my origins, but felt shame about my heritage. When I began at Harvard College in 1983, I chose to major in East Asian Studies because of the department's excellent reputation. I wanted finally to understand China. But I was baffled with systematic analyses of her political and cultural traditions. To my frustration, nothing I learned about China resonated within me, and I resented deeply suggestions from students in other majors that knowledge about China should have been innate for me. If I understood China no better than my classmates, most of whom were American, then what was wrong with me? Was I not Chinese enough? I often feared as much. That year, while studying for a survey Chinese history course, widely referred to as rice patties, I came across my family name in a few texts. The Zhangs were usually mentioned in connection with the May 4th era, a period from about 1919 to 1926, that witnessed tremendous upheaval of traditional Confucian culture as Western ideals pushed to the fore. Named after the nation's first pro-democracy demonstration, which took place on Tiananmen Square on May 4th, 1919, the era produced...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?